And joining us on Perspectives today is J.A. Jantz. She is the New York Times bestselling author of the J.P. Beaumont series, the Joanna Brady series, the Allie Reynolds series, and five interrelated thrillers about the Walker family, as well as a volume of poetry. J.A. is the author of the recent book, Dance of the Bones, and this is a J.P. Beaumont and Brandon Walker novel. And as we mentioned, she's done a lot of series, and I wonder if you're anything behind the World series, J.A.
Well, the thing about all of those books, this Dance of the Bones is my 51st book. The thing that I think is wonderful is not bad for a girl who wasn't allowed in the creative writing program at the University of Arizona in 1964, because, as the professor told me, I was a girl. Every time I hit the list, I suspect that he is spinning in his grave. And he died before my first book was published, so he missed it.
Well, but you got him back because you turned him into one of the bad guys in your books, right?
I certainly did. In the first Walker family book, Hour of the Hunter, I was a K-12 librarian on the reservation for 5 years. My husband, who was allowed in the creative writing program that was closed to me, told me that there was only going to be one writer in our family, and he was it. And so in Hour of the Hunter, the main character, Diana Ladd, is a teacher on the reservation who really wants to be a writer. Like me, she had a husband who was allowed in the creative writing that was closed to her. He's dead at the beginning of the book. And the crazed killer turns out to be a former professor of creative writing from the University of Arizona. So yes, do not make mystery writers mad. We can and do get even.
Well, what about, I guess our audience might be wondering about your husband. Did he write any books? I'm not aware of any.
No, he never published anything. He imitated Faulkner and Hemingway primarily by drinking too much and writing too little. And he died of chronic alcoholism at age 42, a year and a half after I divorced him. And, you know, in order to die of booze that early, you really have to get a running start at it. And he did.
Wow. We're visiting with New York Times bestselling author J.A. Jantz. She is the author of the recent book, Dance of the Bones. Now, one of the things I was wanting to know a little bit about as far as the region that you write about Arizona and Seattle. And as you mentioned earlier, you were a librarian and an insurance agent in Arizona before you became a writer.
Yes, I was. I needed to support myself. I was raised in Arizona. I was raised in Bisbee. So Arizona is my home. I divorced my husband in 1980. In the previous 8 years, he had been hospitalized 9 times for chronic alcoholism. And I divorced him when he turned up at my 6-year-old son's t-ball game, so drunk at 5 o'clock in the afternoon that when the game was over, he crawled on his hands and knees back to the car. And it was during that walk that I realized if 18 years of loving him hadn't fixed him, I had to do something to save my children and myself. So I got a divorce, and as soon as I got the divorce, he started showing up on my doorstep saying, you know, you said in sickness and in health, you need to take me back. I didn't divorce him because I no longer loved him. I divorced him to save my life. So I took my kids. We did an adventure in moving, the kids and me and the U-Haul trailer, and moved from Phoenix to Seattle. And it was in Seattle in 1982 that I finally had the courage to start living my lifelong dream of becoming a writer. And so Arizona is my home. Seattle is my creative home. And I know both areas very well.
We're visiting with New York Times bestselling author J.A. Jantz, and she is the author of the recent novel, Dance of the Bones. Jay, one of the things that you mentioned about your husband and your marriage, and it seems like that would be enough evidence there or material to write a book. And I'm wondering, the first book that you wrote about, and you talked about the librarian and the husband, did you include any of that other information in other novels?
Well, when I started writing about Beaumont in the early 80s, he was a middle-aged homicide cop, divorced, drank too much. When I started writing about him, he couldn't work all the time. So I had him doing what I had lived with for all those years. You know, they always say, write what you know. So Bo did the kind of drinking that I had lived with for 18 years. Well, I thought of it as just a bit of stage business. But by book four, people started asking me, you know, Bo drinks every day. He has a drink of choice. It's starting to interfere with his work. Does J.P. Beaumont have a problem? And at first I said, well, these are books. But then I realized alcoholism is a disease of denial. No wonder the author was the last person to figure it out. So, yes, I drew on that to create his character, but I did so without actually knowing I was doing it. And that's part of the mystery of being a writer, because things leak into my books without my noticing. And I actually have a book that is focused on that aspect of my life, that relationship, that doomed relationship with my first husband. It's a book of poetry called After the Fire. And yes, it's poetry, but it's also my autobiography. And it goes from being a hopeful newlywed until my having a former spouse die after you're divorced puts you in a particular kind of limbo that's tough to live in. But the title poem in After the Fire goes like this. I have touched the fire. It burned me, but I knew I lived. It seared me, but it made me whole. He called me. I went gladly, though I saw the rocks fell laughing through the singeing air. I have known the fire. I'll live with nothing rather than with less. The flame is out. There's nothing left but ash.
Wow, that's an incredible poem, and I would imagine that those lines, that story, there are a lot of women out there who perhaps can identify with that.
There are a lot of women and men. The problem is when you're stuck in that kind of a storm with someone addicted to drugs or alcohol or whatever, it's very isolating, and it's hard to believe that you're not the only one who ever believed all those promises. And people who read After the Fire find that they are anything but alone. And from the mail I've had from readers, in some cases, it's been really helpful.
Does the poem appear in a specific volume of poetry that you wrote, or what's the name of the book?
I only have one volume of poetry, and it's called After the Fire.
And that is available in paperback, ebook, whatever?
No, it's not available in paperback. It's available in hardback, ebook, and audio editions. And actually, I read the audio. I recorded the audio edition myself.
Is that something that the publishers encourage you to do, or you wanted to do? Because sometimes some of the authors who have audio books, their voices may not work because they want to use dramatic narration or something else. So with you, because you wrote that and it's so close to your heart, I would imagine that it was very easy to do that.
It was, surprisingly enough, I wanted to read it, but even though those poems were 30 to 40 years in my rearview mirror, reading them aloud still caused my heart to break and tears to come to my eyes.
We're visiting with J.A. Jantz, and she is the author of the recent book, Dance of the Bones. And this is something that, well, I'm not sure if other authors have done it. And this is where she crosses two characters from two different series. And when you're talking about that, when you're writing, I'm not sure if this happens to you. You know, a lot of us get writer's block. And when I was writing journalism, television news, sometimes you would get stuck and you're wondering, what do I write next? Does that happen to you?
Of course it does. And the only thing to do is to keep writing. That's the only cure. Don't give up. Keep working on it.
Your dream came true, as you mentioned, and you have kind of adopted Janice Ian at 17 to talk about that. Mind telling us about that?
I don't mind at all. You can't see this over the phone, but I'm 6'1", and I was 6 feet tall by the time I was in seventh grade. I was smart. I wore glasses, thick glasses. And in junior high and high school, that's a recipe for social disaster. So I married the first guy who ever asked me out. I actually married the second guy who asked me out, too. But he was a much better material. And he says that my first husband was so bad that it made his life perfect for the past 30 years. But in high school, I had no social life at all. By the late 70s, I was working in the life insurance business in Phoenix. I was trying to sort out in my head if I was going to divorce my husband or not. And if I did divorce my husband, would I be able to support my kids? Would I be able to keep food on the table, a roof over our heads? I was worried about all of that stuff. And so I drove from appointment to appointment, listening to the music of Gordon Lightfoot, Cobwebs and Dust, Cobwebs and Dust. I hate to leave you, but leave you I must. And Helen Reddy, of course, I Am Woman, Hear Me Roar. But Janice Ian's lyrics broke my heart. And when I heard her sing at 17, I thought, boy, she and I have walked in the same moccasins. But then I found out she's only 4'10". So walking in the same moccasins wasn't doable. For many years, I closed my presentations by singing that song. And the year my husband had dual knee replacement surgery, I had agreed to go to a writer's conference to be the keynote speaker. I found out that he was going to be released from the hospital on the day I was supposed to be in Boise, Idaho. So I told my daughters, well, I'll just call the writer's conference and say my husband's in the hospital, I can't come. And they said, Mom, you promised. You need to keep your word. You go to Boise. We'll look after Dad. It's really revolting when all of a sudden your kid starts spouting your own words back at you. So I went. I went under protest, but I went. I sang that song at noon on Saturday. And Sunday night, when I got back from the conference, there was an email from Janice Ian saying, hey, I heard you sang my song and that you did a good job of it. In the audience in Boise was someone who was a fan of my books, a fan of Janice Ian's music, and she went straight back to Nashville and squealed on me. Since then, Janice Ian and I have become friends. And actually, a couple of years ago at a living room concert, I got to sing that song with her in a duet. And that wasn't easy because she still has that wonderful, clear voice, soprano voice. And I sing in what she told me, Judy, you sing in the key of R. So I still end my presentations with her song. The other night, I was doing a presentation in Mill Creek, Washington, and there were three people sitting in the front row on the left side of the room. And the two women were very much engaged in the talk. They laughed at the jokes. They were both holding books. And there was a gentleman with them, and he was totally disengaged. He never looked at me. He never laughed at any of the jokes. He never smiled. He was totally not engaged. And yet, at the end of the program, when I started singing that song, he still didn't look at me, but he mouthed all the words. He knew every single word to that song that ends with, dreams were all they gave for free to ugly duckling girls like me. When my first husband was in the hospital dying in 1982, my mother-in-law called me, and I went, and we sat together that last night. And when we had talked as much as we could talk, his mother asked me if I would sing. And so for hours, I sang every song that came into my head, every song I remembered. And that was how we passed that night until finally he drew his last breath and was gone. I've learned since that I sang to him that night because I thought maybe the familiarity of the music would somehow penetrate to wherever he was. He was in a deep coma by then. I've learned since that what I instinctively did then is real because I've been told that with patients with dementia or Alzheimer's, that music is something that can bring them back. And I suspect that gentleman that night was in the early stages of Alzheimer's, and Janice Ian's music spoke to him in a way I did not. And I'm very grateful for that.
Did you have the opportunity to meet him or talk with him at all?
No. They left. I was signing books. I was immediately surrounded by people wanting to have their books signed, and I didn't get to talk to them. But that's my suspicion of what the situation was. I don't know that for sure.
We're visiting with New York Times bestselling author J.A. Jantz. She is the author of the recent novel Dance of the Bones. J.A., one of the things you were talking about earlier about this gentleman and the music and the words, did you ever perhaps think or imagine as far as writing your books that writers reach out to different people in different ways? And just like this man who was at conference, he perhaps interpreted your song, your message in a different way as the next person. So your words, as you're writing them, you don't know what impact they're going to have on a person.
I didn't anticipate that. I met a young man years ago who read about J.P. Beaumont in junior high and decided he was going to be a cop. He joined the Army. He served in the military as an MP. And when he got out, he said he was a raging alcoholic, but he still wanted to be a cop. So he applied at a small jurisdiction in the middle of Texas. They hired him. They sent him to the police academy. And he said on the day he graduated from the academy, he realized that if he was ever going to be the kind of police officer Bo was, he needed to get sober. So he went straight from the academy to treatment. He is now the police chief in that little town. And he introduced me to his daughter. He was rolling his daughter along in a stroller. And he said, "This is my daughter. Her name is Morgan. My wife wouldn't let me name her JP."
We're visiting with New York Times bestselling author J.A. Jance. Dance of the Bones is her most recent novel. Talking about that young man and also the region of in Arizona, can you tell us a little bit about, because you kind of interweave the history of the tribe in that reservation that you lived in and worked at.
Yes, the Walker books are more like French braiding a book than they are writing it. I was a storyteller on the reservation. I was a librarian. I told 26 stories a week in K-6 classrooms. Some of the stories are the stories we all grew up with, the Brothers Grimm and the Little Engine That Could and all of those. But I also learned and told the stories of the Tohono O'odham people. And the thing that's magic about folklore is that it crosses all international boundaries. It crosses boundaries of ethnicity and language. And as when I decided to try putting some of those things into the books, I was astonished to see how those ancient stories wove themselves into my new stories. So, yes, those are the real legends of the Tohono O'odham people. And it's a way of bringing my readers some understanding of the people I met while working on the reservation.
We're visiting with J.A. Jance, New York Times bestselling author, the recent book, Dance of the Bones. J.A., when you are writing, do you specifically or have you had to change your ways of writing because of political correctness?
My daughter was born while we were on the reservation. I had been working with those little brown-faced kids for so long that when I brought my white-faced baby home from the hospital, I thought she was sick. But my friend Pauline Hendricks told me she wasn't sick, and she gave her the name Sku'uchu, which means pretty one. 2 years ago, when my son was in second grade, or my grandson Colt was in second grade, he's 9 now, but he was 9 months old when we lost his father to a 9-year battle with malignant melanoma. And Colt is a spitting image of his father. He has this bronze hair. It's not carrot top hair. It's this lush bronze coppery color. Well, Indian names are given to someone by either an elder or a relative. And there weren't very many Indians running around in Bellevue right then. And so when I was on the reservation, I was a storyteller. I was tall. I often wore bright green dress. So the kids called me the Jolly Green Giant. But they also called me a Big Toe Indian. On the reservation, a Big Toe Indian is one with so little Indian blood that only their big toe actually qualifies. But I figured that was enough of an Indian in Bellevue to give Colt his Indian name. So because of his hair, I gave him the name Wegi, W-E-G-I, which is Tohono O'odham for red. And I put an S before Wegi, so Wegi. And an S before any word means in a good way. So red in a good way, feathers. The word for feather is on in Tohono O'odham. If we want to go from one feather to two feathers, we add an S on the end of the word. The Tohono O'odham add a syllable at the beginning of the word. So Sawigi A'an means red feathers. And this book is dedicated to Colt. Well, as soon as I gave him his Indian name, he went to school the next day and told his teacher, Steve, that he had an Indian name. Now, excuse me, He was going to a school where they called the teachers by the first name. It was the school my son-in-law wanted him to go to. If John had actually lived to see what that school was like, it never would have happened. But if you have a school where the teachers are called by their students by their first name, Steve, John, Norma, you've already got a problem. And so Colts told Steve, his second-grade teacher, I have an Indian name, and it's Sawigi A'an. And Steve looked down at him and said, Colt, you do not have an Indian name. It is the indigenous people of the Pacific Northwest. And Colt looked up at him and said, where my grandma is from, they just call them Indians.
J.A., we want to thank you very much for being with us today. We've been visiting with J.A. Jantz, New York Times bestselling author, recent novel Dance of the Bones. And as we wrap up here, J.A., is there a website that they can go to where they can find out more about your experiences, about reservation, anything like that?
My website is jajantz.com. There's a lot on the website about me. Reading my blog posts for the last 9 years are windows on my life. I don't get to live my life as a hermit up in the attic writing in dead silence. And I think people who love my books enjoy reading the blog. I try to bring humor to life. There's enough bad news out there. But periodically, I go on a politically incorrect rant. You know, you can't always be uplifting.
Well, we want to thank you very much for your being so transparent and open about your life and your books. And, of course, want to thank you so much also for being with us today. We've been visiting with New York Times bestselling author J.A. Jantz. Dance of the Bones is the recent novel. Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTEP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Norma Martinez. Our producer is Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Louis Sines.